Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, get ready for Garden Talk, hosted by Len Giddix on WTIC News Talk 1080. Call in now with your garden questions, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC.
Nothing's quite as charming as working in the garden in the morning. Picking sweet tomatoes and healing up potatoes in the morning. And when we take a break beneath the...
And a wonderful afternoon to you, everyone. Welcome to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. You know, it's not a bad afternoon for Thanksgiving. I mean, it's we had a very cold introduction to winter a couple days ago.
Yeah, but it's spring now.
Yeah.
Oh, that was winter.
That was winter. Oh. It's all over.
No wonder the woolly bears didn't have any markings on
the
them.
The boss is getting pretty ramped up for snow removal. He's going to be sorry to hear about that.
And with us today is the notorious Lobster Bob and Scott Real from Winterberry Gardens.
Don't I get to be notorious?
Yes.
You will be.
I'm pretty sure I already am.
We're celebrating today, Scott.
Okay. What are we celebrating with?
We're celebrating Lobster Bob's 15th anniversary on the program.
That wasn't my question. What are we celebrating with? I mean, come on.
Oh, what are we celebrating with?
Well, let's get to the menu the cake type, et cetera, et cetera.
First,
et cetera.
Let me lead up to this.
Bob, go ahead. All right. Yeah.
Lisa and I announced that this was a lunch show and that, you know.
No food.
No food.
You know. Oh, sure.
Well, Bob, and we wanted a vice president in charge of lunch. Mm-hmm. And then
an internship,
yeah, that you could grow into to be an intern responsible for everything. Well, Bob sent in unannounced lunch.
Oh, I remember. I'm not entirely sure I was present for the first one, but I do remember being the recipient of Bob's largesse.
Yeah. And so, Bob, congratulations. You made it.
No, wait a minute.
Made it?
No.
You couldn't get me to go away.
I finally made it after 15 years. My application for internship has finally been approved.
Well, I guess you, by the looks of it, you've renewed your internship. What do we have today, Bob?
Well, we got sausage bread. We've got herring.
Pickled herring. Oh,
pickled
yeah.
Pickled herring.
Scott, you're quincing here.
A little. Pick, yeah, just not quite my, yeah.
Okay.
I like my pickles of the vegetal.
If you were Eastern European, that would be different.
Oh, I understand. Yes. My Czech stepfather, who is no longer with us, but yes, he was a huge fan of all things pickled seafood, yep. et cetera, et cetera.
and Hostess cream-filled cupcakes.
They don't make Hostess anymore.
Well, that's from, they look
from
like
Stu Leonard's.
But it looks like, yeah, it looks like what somebody would make as a Hostess cupcake if they made it at home.
When you try
which
one.
I'm more interested in, frankly.
Close your eyes. Don't look at the box that says Stu Leonard, and you'll think you're eating Hostess cream-filled cupcakes.
And then another New Britain
favorite
classic.
Avery Soda.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still in the same spot since I don't know
18,
when.
But, you know, I love that they innovate. They've got that Totally Gross line, and I am a fan of the Kitty Piddle, which is actually a pineapple orange type soda. Just the whole label and everything in the name, and it's, you know, I love that.
They had a whole section of it there. Hmm? They had the Kitty Piddle. They had Dog Barf.
I think it's dog drool, actually.
No, I don't know. They keep changing stuff. They come up with new stuff.
Well,
it's bug barf and dog drool. See,
that's right. You're more experienced in that line.
522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. We've got Tom from Harrington. Who says you can't talk about gardening before Thanksgiving?
We're going to be talking about some gardening before Thanksgiving.
Tom, welcome to Garden Talk.
Hi. I have a problem, and I'm not really sure how to deal with this. Over the past year, I started pepper plants from seed. I grew them in small containers out on my deck, very small containers. These are hot peppers. And they've been producing peppers all the way through October, you know, flowers fertilized and new peppers grew. So right now I've got about 15 peppers on these two plants.
So this is an enclosed porch? Or?
No.
No? Outside?
Well, they haven't been out. They're outside right now, but they haven't been outside for the past 3 weeks. But during the spring, summer, and early fall, I was putting them out every day. And then, you know, on the cool nights, I would bring them inside.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I was going to say I barely survived Monday, so I don't know how a pepper plant would.
I mean, they're inside in a window, and, you know, they're producing more flowers, and it's amazing. I mean, this is like Thanksgiving, and I've got peppers growing. But here's the problem. The other day, or about a week ago, I noticed there's all these little tiny flying insects in the soil.
Yep.
And, you know,
brown
I stir
ones,
the
maybe,
soil
gray.
With my fingers, or I water the soil to fertilize them. These things come flying out, and they're very, very small.
So they're definitely flying now.
I'm eating these peppers. So I don't know what I could use that would kill the insects in the soil, not harm the pepper plants, and not make the peppers unedible for me.
Well, first of all, the insect that you're talking about is a very friendly insect and wants to say hello when you touch the plant or go near it. So know that before we start destroying them. But, Scott, you have an idea?
I do. Because I've used this before,
and
it works great. So these are fungus gnats.
Mm.
They're a symbiote organism. We call them fungus gnats because you don't get the fungus without the gnats, and you don't get the gnats without the fungus. One shows up, and the other one's always there. So one of the things that I found works real well is just a quick dusting of cinnamon. So what the cinnamon does is, it kind of creates a drying situation. It helps kind of dry out the fungus. Mm-hmm. And then the volatile oils, this is a pretty delicate insect. You know, they're not huge.
No, and they're friendly. And this is the type of season that cinnamon on the soil is going to be a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it kind of does double duty there. Helps take care of the bug, helps take care of the fungus. And like I said, if we're eliminating both of them at the same time, those guys are not hanging out for very long.
And if they still bother you, take the vacuum out and vacuum them up every couple of days.
Yeah, that's another great
while they're flying around.
Non-destructive, completely organic, et cetera, way to handle that. Yeah. Absolutely.
So are you telling me to put powdered cinnamon on
that's
the
right.
surface of the soil?
Just a dusting, too. We're not talking about dumping teaspoons and teaspoons on there. But, yeah, whenever you see these guys, just give them a quick dusting of cinnamon. Won't affect your plants at all. And, hey, if you got a pepper that picked up a little cinnamon flavor, hey, I think you got something there. So even if it did do that, but I've never seen it actually pick up in the flavors and whatnot. But, yeah, and it's also a great way to go after ants if you've got ants in a pot.
Yeah, they don't like cinnamon either.
They do not like that that essential oil with the real strong scent.
And Tom,
does the cinnamon kill the the fungus gnats? Or
this is going to, it'll certainly eliminate them. Yeah, and it makes them not want to stick around the pot because now there's these volatile oils, but they need that fungus. That is basically their primary food source. So we're kind of separating them. And the deal with the ants is, it actually, the cinnamon's strong enough to break the pheromone trails, which are how ants communicate. That's how they tell the other ants, this is where we're going back and forth. Yep. You know, this is our trail.
If you don't believe Scott, this summer when you see an anthill, take a circle of cinnamon and put it around,
put
the,
it
ant
around
hill.
The anthill. And watch.
They won't go out.
Yeah.
They won't go by it. Nope.
So by putting the cinnamon on the soil, I'm going to eliminate the fungus ants from the soil, but am I going to drive them over to my other house plants?
Yeah, maybe.
That's a possibility, but again, a little dust and the cinnamon on those guys won't hurt them either.
You're not going to hurt anything with the cinnamon.
Yeah.
So these containers are coffee containers. They're about 8 inches in diameter. How much cinnamon would I put on the top of each plant? A half a teaspoon?
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, you want a thin dusting,
like,
but you're probably at about the right amount.
No more than you would put on a slice of toast.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Yeah. If you're doing the same way you do your toast, that's a good good measurement, Len.
But, Tom, I have a warning for you. You say you have flowers on these, and you probably intend to keep them around as long as possible, correct?
Oh, I'm going to overwinter them.
Okay. You may very well have to play honeybee.
Oh, I know. I've been manually pollinating by rubbing flowers from one plant on flowers of the other.
Good for you.
But it gives you a really good chance for some controlled cross-pollination. So, you know, if you got that special Carolina Reaper you've been hanging on to for a while or something. Oh, hey, I'll tell you what. Our guy down there in North Carolina who originally came up with the Reaper, he is on and beyond that stuff. He's got Big Reaper now. There's all sorts of that is just blowing up.
Idle minds. Mm-hmm. All right, Tom. Well, I hope that solves your problem. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. There's not a question, garden question out there we don't have an answer to. May not be the right answer, but it'll
come up with an answer.
There's a good odds.
We'll be back right after this. Back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. You know, I was thinking the other day, no one whistles anymore. Back when I was a boy, everybody whistled.
My grandfather would whistle all day long.
And when you can't be sad while you're whistling, can you? And then I did a little research, and so the bump music on this show today is dedicated to whistling through the ages.
Oh.
And it goes right up into 2016 that I was able to get.
Yep. That's the last time somebody whistled was 2016. Yeah.
No. In a song. That was
probably. Oh, yeah. Okay. There might be whistling, but you can't hear him through the mask.
Yeah, that's true. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. We're here with Scott Real from Winterberry Gardens and the legendary Lobster Bob, who's celebrating his 15th anniversary on Garden Talk. Let's go to Jack in Newington, what you say? Hey, Jack, welcome to Garden Talk.
Hey, good afternoon, and congratulations to Lobster Bob, and I hope he has a 15-year-old lobster with him. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I have a plant that they call a bonsai. I picked it up recently in one of the discount stores, and I think it's a caudex. It looks like a thick trunk that's twisted a little bit. The plant, I moved it into a 4-inch pot. And it's got little stems and little ovate-shaped leaves on it. It was doing well most of the summer. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the summer, I noticed the leaves kind of getting a whitish tint to them, almost kind of white-gray. And just the other day, I brought them inside a few weeks ago, and just the other day I noticed in the little branches where leaves are, like a little fine, tiny spider web, like a little gypsy moth-type web. Mm-hmm. You know, like you've seen the branch of the tree?
Yep.
And I was wondering what that was. Now, I took sprayed alcohol on it.
That might be a little bit harsh. But
I swabbed it.
Do you know what type of bonsai this is?
It's a bonsai. Some people call it a Japanese money tree, but I collect cactus plants, and I think it's a type of succulent.
Not the money tree that I know, but
is the money tree the one they braid?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This doesn't have the stems braided, but
have you seen any spiders?
Not a thing. These little webs are maybe a quarter inch. Yeah. They look like a little tiny, tiny, very fragile gypsy moth.
Yeah.
Along with silvery white leaves, I think you were on the right track, Leonard.
Yeah. Well, we had a discussion here because, you know, we get the info before you actually get on the air. We think it's spider mites, which is very common.
Which would be very common. Yeah.
Very common. Now, how to get rid of your spider mites?
What color are the spider mites?
Black.
Oh, they can be. They can be red. They can be orangey. They can be a lot of different colors.
Yeah.
But they're like the size of a poppy seed.
Yeah, I had some of them years ago. And there isn't anything there. Nothing even much smaller. I looked at it with a magnifying glass, and I couldn't find anything.
Well, if they're making webs, they're there, and they're alive. I know Lisa takes them in the shower, takes the whole plant in the shower with her and rinses off the leaves every once in a while.
Mites do like it dry, so.
Yes, they do.
And if for any bonsai, be it evergreen or deciduous, regular misting is a real good idea to help, one, keep the plant hydrated, because don't forget it doesn't have much of a root system. And two, to help drive off the things like, all trees, even the big trees outside, do a lot of absorption through the tree itself.
Mm-hmm.
The first 2 inches of most rainfalls falling into a regular tree get absorbed by the leaves, bark, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So misting is pretty much a given. When I used to keep a lot of bonsais, I used to run a humidifier and keep them in a humidity tray, where I'd have stone underneath, and I'd actually fill some with the water up into the tray and let it evaporate around
the plants. Right. They do that with orchids sometimes too, don't they?
Yes, they do. That's absolutely right. So I think Len is on the right track. It really does sound like spider mites.
He's still my
heart. Wait a minute.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I know this is twice I've agreed with you, and we're barely in.
We've only been on for 20 minutes.
I know. It's shocking, but there it is. Sometimes he's correct.
It'll change.
He hasn't mentioned UFOs or Bigfoot, not once. Mm-hmm. I think Len might be on his game today.
Well, there you go, Jack.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. You know what I'll do? I have a little sprayer right in my kitchen sink, so I'll spray it rather than taking a shower and setting the dirt in the pot and everything else.
Oh, yeah. Avoid the dirt.
The other potential here, too, that I'm thinking on, I like neem oil because it's a triple threat. It's a fungicide, it's an insecticide, and it's a miticide.
And it smells good, citrusy.
Yeah. Some folks like the smell, some don't. But more importantly, it's really effective for any of a number of different things, mites being included amongst them. And that might be my recommendation.
Might be.
I see what you did there.
Again? All right, Jack. Thanks for the call.
What did you recommend?
Neem oil.
N-E-E-M, as in Mary.
N-E-M oil.
E-E.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much again, and congratulations to Lobster Bob.
Thank you.
Okay,
we'll be celebrating the whole show.
Thank you, my friend. Well, the first half hour is gone. We're all in agreement here.
That's unusual.
You know?
This cannot hold.
No.
Nah.
We're going to disagree on something. Matter of fact, I may say a few things just so I can
disagree with you?
Yeah.
Just to make sure that the earth keeps spinning.
Doug from Watertown, you stay on the line because we have to take a hard break for news, weather, sports, and some more snacks here. This sausage bread from Stu Leonard's is absolutely wonderful.
It is good.
Yeah. Can't wait till the pickled herring comes around.
It's sitting right here.
It's down to Scott's end for some reason.
For some reason. Really unknown to Scott.
But while we're having lunch, why don't you listen to the news, weather, and sports? Because we'll be back with more Garden Talk right after this. Buenos tardes, damas y caballeros. It's time for Listen to Scott, the Garden Mariachi.
I'm a garden mariachi.
Yeah, that's your new title.
I want one of the guys with the big bass guitar then, you know. Well, I love those just absolutely nice? Giant, huge mariachi four-string bass guitars.
Yeah, well, I really enjoy this song.
So, what do we want to talk about this week? Well, we just had winter, as Bob was telling us earlier. I don't think that was the last of winter. I think there's more coming. So, and again, we were discussing, well, what to do in the garden in winter. We're out of jobs. We're out of things to do. And I say, nay, nay.
No, we're not.
Nay, nay.
We are not out of jobs. In fact, there is one job to be done in the garden that is better done this time of year than any other. And that is pruning. Now, I'm not talking about everything out there. We don't want to go prune on that, you know, little Japanese white pine or anything. A lot of these guys are still alive, still moving the sap. And we'll hold off on those. But a lot of the deciduous materials.
Nor do we want to prune the stuff that's going to flower early in spring.
Well, of course, we don't want to go after things like our azaleas and our rhododendrons because they've already got buds set on them. But things like our Japanese maple, and you've been eyeballing that Japanese maple, and oh, it was so cute when you put it in. You remember when it was little? Mm-hmm. It's not so little anymore, is it? It's kind of gotten big, and it's starting to hang over the gutter, and all those leaves are going in.
It doesn't grow up.
Yeah, don't grow it up.
And you can't walk down the driveway.
Sure.
The tree's branches hanging over.
So, let's go over the different things that are good to prune right now and the reasons why we might.
Okay.
So, first things first, like the Japanese maple. Quite often, the first things we want to go in and do are cut out the diseased branches. We want to cut out the crossing branches. Well, boy, it's so much easier to see all that stuff when the leaves are gone.
Yeah, but they're not gone yet, at least on mine.
Well, turn the leaf blower in that direction next time. Believe me, they'll come a-flying off.
Okay.
I would agree that some of the dissectum types, the smaller lace leaves, are still hanging on to it a little bit. But most of those bigger ones, the blood goods and the more upright types, they've shed them all. So we can see better. There's our first good reason to do. Second reason why we might prune this time of year, or even a little later in winter, disease pressure. As soon as you open a wound in a tree, well, there's a bunch of different things looking to get in there. So we can prune now when the disease pressure is at its absolute lowest and not have to worry about any of the diseases like anthracnose getting into our little Japanese maple. So third reason why we might want to prune this time of year, no insect pressures.
Right.
Much like the disease, we don't have any of those guys to worry about.
Right.
Another good reason would be this time of year, the plant starts to dry out a little bit. It's not quite as, you know, full of sap and vigor. It's sent a lot of stuff to the roots. Well, you know how that piece of celery kind of gets a little wobbly when it starts to dry out a little bit?
Yeah.
Your tree's doing sort of the same thing. Uh-huh. It's a little easier to cut. It's a little lighter this time of year because it doesn't have quite as much wet in it. But for me, I think the reason I like the best when pruning this time of year is because it doesn't stimulate growth. Any other time of the year when we have leaves and buds on that plant, mm-hmm. we're going to stimulate new buds, new leaves. It's just going to start popping growth instantly. So if we're looking to control growth, to maybe make sure it's not growing so quickly over the gutter and stuff, this is exactly the time to do it. Now, I'm talking about Japanese maples, but there's any number of other things that are good to prune at this time. Most all of your deciduous shrubs, but fruit trees. There's a reason why the guys in the orchards are out there pruning and burning stuff in January and February. And again, it's those disease pressures, which are even more prevalent in fruit plants.
I got one more reason why it's a good time, because we just said we don't have anything to do.
And this is that time where you can start putting an eye towards next year. Pruning up those plants is one of the best ways to make sure we've got nice, new, controlled growth coming out in spring. It's a great time to be out there, folks, as long as you got on a good parka.
That's right. Excellent, excellent information there,
Plus,
Scott.
You can do a lot of branch and some removal of branches just to make it for beautification purposes. That one branch that was kind of sticking out to the side that doesn't look nice. Yeah. And now's the time to trim it off.
And thinning out is a good way to make sure we don't get too much snow load on there, which can snap and break things.
So we're
going to
talk about that a little bit later, yeah. All right, Scott. Good. See, you are the garden mariachi.
This is scary. The three of us are all
muchas gracias.
Here we go again, yeah. Hey, let's go to Doug in Watertown. Hey, Doug, you still there, buddy?
Still here.
Oh, thank you for hanging on. What can we do for you?
I have some foundation plantings, inkberries.
Yep.
And they've grown about 6 foot tall, and they're blocking quite a bit of the view. And,
yep.
But I only have leaves on, like, the top 2 feet. I was wondering if I took off the top third of these bushes, are they going to rekindle and regrow again?
Boy, that is pretty typical of an inkberry that doesn't have enough light.
Yeah, well, it tends to be very vase-shaped, so the top starts shading the bottom. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, so one of the reasons I like to prune on inkberries, I like to take out some of the stuff and keep them thinned out right down at the bottom, because one, that will help to regenerate new shoots from the bottom, so you're going to keep some more leaves in there.
Yeah.
And it's going to make sure that, yeah, it thins out that top to let a little more light and air circulation through.
Yeah,
but certainly try to bring them.
They're in an area where they don't get a lot of sunlight. They're kind of light on the shoots.
Yeah.
Side.
So when I find them in the wild, and they're a little harder to identify out in the wild because they're not quite as evergreen as most of what we're selling in cultivars and stuff that are available today. When I find them out there in the winter, they haven't a leaf on them pretty much. They're mostly identifiable by the berry. But I generally find them in swamps. Red maple swamp is a real good, certainly a place to look for them. And yeah, it tends to be a little lighter just because of the swampy situation. There tends to be more of that dappily sunlight. I think that's their absolute preference. And if it's super dark shade, we might actually want to think about moving those guys out somewhere and finding the right plant for the right place.
Right. That's what I would suggest. There's not much you can do. They're going to still be bare on the bottom, not because of anything you've done, but because they're just not getting enough light. Now, what you could do this summer in order to preserve those leaves, they can get whipped around by, what are they, on the north or the north side?
They're in the northeast, yes.
Yeah, and they're going to get whipped by winter winds, so to maintain the leaves that you do have, you may want to spray some wilt-proof or some sort of protectant on them. And this is the perfect time of year to do that, too.
Yeah.
I just went and bought my wilt-proof the other day.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing that next week.
That's why I bought it, so I can do it next week.
Yep.
Because I'll think about doing it next week, and I won't have the wilt proof.
That's right.
It's right here in Connecticut.
Yes, it is.
So basically what you're saying is best to move these plants somewhere else and put something else in that location.
Yeah, move them in the sun, maybe on the south side, on the east. Well, south side would be best, probably.
Yeah.
And then pick something that's going to take go to your garden center, do some research, see what's available for a shade-tolerant plant that's not going to get bare on the bottom for you.
Oh, I got one for you.
Go ahead, Scott.
I've fallen in love with a little pyramidal holly called Red Beauty.
Oh, yeah.
Out of Rutgers University, and those guys do good work with plants down there. Oh. And this thing just berries up real hard. Stays real tight, unlike the old Dragon Ladies and some of the older ones.
Yeah, but I love the name Dragon Lady.
I know you like the name Dragon Lady. I'm not so fond of the plant anymore because I think there's better out there, and I think this one's one of them.
How tall do they get, though, Scott?
So it can get to about 20 feet if you let it, but that's the thing with hollies. They take a pruning so well. Oh, you can pretty much keep them where you want.
You whack them back once a year, you're all set.
Yeah, exactly so.
Every 2-3 years, give them a good hard.
Oh, yeah. Or hard actually, whacking. If you go after the berries, now's a good time.
Yeah.
I hope that helps you out there, my friend.
It does. Thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome. Okay, 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC. Chris from Weathersfield, we're gonna go to a short break, but we'll take your call right after this. Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk.
It's not polite to make radio with your mouth full.
I know, but it's so hard. They put, you know, at least they could give you soft food on a regular basis. We're celebrating Bob's anniversary.
Nothing but mashed potatoes during the show from here on out.
522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC.
I'm a solutions guy, Len. I'm always thinking.
Yes, you are. And that's Scott Real from Winterberry Gardens right in Southington.
In Southington, right on the Bristol line, right across from ESPN.
I was going to say, right across from ESPN.
You can't find Scott at Winterberry. He's over at Lake Compound.
I want to give a quick shout-out. We just did, in support of Bread for Life in Southington, we just did from Wednesday to Friday, come in, 50% of your sale instantly donated to Bread for Life.
Wow.
We were real happy with the turnout.
Oh, good.
We just want to thank everybody that helped us out.
Well,
with
next
that.
Time, that give us a call. We'll advertise that for you, too.
That's great, too.
But let's do it before the event.
Before the event, and not after.
Kind of works better.
I understand.
And it is Lobster Bob's 15th anniversary on the program. We've been here for nearly 20 years. So let us go to Chris in Wethersfield. Hey, Chris, welcome to Garden Talk. Chris, are you there?
Yes.
There she is.
Hi. How can we help you, Chris?
Okay, I have a Clivia miniata. Mm-hmm. I've had it since February of 95. It was a gift to me for doing some school fundraising. Mm-hmm. And it has only bloomed once.
So what are you doing wrong?
That's what I am. I'm trying to...
I have one that we've had, since before Lobster Bob's first day on Garden Talk. So this thing's over 20 years old. And the thing I have found is they don't tend to be great flowerers until they're pot bound.
Okay, so I am doing something good because I believe, getting pot bound.
So if it's just getting the pot bound, this might very well explain your lack of flowers. And so the other thing to remember here is if we ever do have to do a transplant for this, we want to go up just the tiniest bit in a pot size, any transplant that you're doing for the Clivia.
It blooms best when pot bound, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
But sometimes.
So we put those changes off. Yeah, I mean, eventually mine is in a 10-gallon pot at this point. Eventually you got to do, and you might skip a little flowering on that year that you do the transplant.
And when you see the roots coming up to the surface and the pot cracking.
Yeah, that's when that's exactly right. That's when it's time. But yeah, it helps to understand where the plant's from. This is a South African plant. It likes those kind of dryish, this doesn't need a ton of water to keep it going. It likes those dry, deserty conditions and a hard, flinty soil, and, it'll survive all that.
What about fertilizer, Scott? What do you do?
You know what? We almost never did. And, if you're going in with a nitrogen fertilizer, that's going to convert more to plant growth, less to flowering side of things.
That's the root.
Again, it's a huge bulb. I mean, it's bigger than a softball once they start to get some size to them. So there's generally, it's made plenty of energy to take care of itself. So, that would be my recommendation. Fertilize only rarely. Let her get a little dry and droopy even almost before that next watering. And don't change that pot until it's absolutely necessary. And, this is one of those ones that's going to get better. 10, 15 years from now, you're really going to be fond of this plant, Chris. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's a slow project.
I'm waiting a long time for this cutie pie. Came from, I'm not even sure if it's still there in Litchfield, the White Flower Farm.
That hasn't gone anywhere.
It's still there?
Yeah,
absolutely.
How cool.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, Chris. Thanks for calling.
They'll be back open in April.
Yeah. We had the opportunity to go down, and you can walk through the greenhouses during begonia season. Oh my gosh, it's just.
You got that? Yeah, I got one that one begonia greenhouse.
Yeah.
Oh my! They must have. I don't know how many hundreds of them hanging up in there.
My right home at that place is the long border, which was done by Christopher. Oh good Lord, I'm losing his name now, but very famous English gardener who's no longer with us, Chris Lloyd. There we go.
Yep.
Almost dropped that, but hey, I found it. And if you want to understand how to do hot color in the garden, Chris was the best on the planet on it. And that board, that long border up there is just
that's right along the wall there, right?
Yeah.
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 Well, it's a sight to see them, and you can. They have a retail outlet as well as the wholesale farm.
So. Yeah. I think our old friend Tom Bodner used to be at Twombly's many, many moons ago.
He is.
Now.
He's back there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our old friend is still there.
Yeah.
Why don't we go to Jane in West Hartford? Hey, Jane, welcome to Garden Talk.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
I'm having
a little feedback, but I'll say it quickly. I planted around a 12 to 15-foot Royal Raindrops crab apple.
Yeah, very nice.
And it bloomed beautifully all spring. Now, during the spring, after the blooming, it got what is called cedar apple rot.
Rust. Yep.
And
I found
out too late that you never plant a crab apple near junipers.
Right.
And I have gardens all over in junipers. So I treated it with a fruit spray and treated it. And I got so discouraged because the leaves turned brown and died. So I cut every branch off and said, that's it, I'm done.
Ouch.
And now it's leafing out the trunk. What do I do?
At the base or at the top?
At the top of the trunk.
Let her grow.
It's leafing.
Let it grow.
I had to pick between junipers and the crabapple, I think I'm leaning crabapple.
Yeah. Yeah, cut the junipers. How many junipers are we talking about?
Well, I have it placed in front of 6 Blue Point junipers, and on the hill I've got, like, lots of spreading junipers.
Yeah. Oh, you got plenty of junipers. Yeah, this is a neat disease for plant pathologists like myself. This is just, you get so excited about it.
Lenny went to college to learn to kill plants.
Yeah, well, no. My mother wanted me to be a doctor, so I said, okay, Mom. I'm a plant doctor, so what? You
know? Yeah.
Well, but I'm a people nurse, so.
Oh, okay. Well, the cedar apple rusts have alternate hosts, and so the juniper is one host, and the apple is the other, and they have to have both in order to survive. The gall, the beautiful alien-looking gall on the juniper is just...
Space invaders.
Oh, man, yeah.
Or it looks like orange jelly with legs.
Now, it's possible that you could spray in the spring after you see orange,
a little
silvery,
spots.
Yeah.
Orange space invaders.
They're orange spots, yeah.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, one day, I went up on the hill, and I'm like, there it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what you could do, I suppose, is to, cut those off. Those are very visible, and you can easily prune those off to reduce the amount of spores. However, that's not going to help you. I'm not quite sure what you might be able to spray on the leaves before infection, but I'm sure there's something out there. I'm trying to look at it right now.
This might be one of those times where rusts are just notably pernicious. They're just real hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
I'll try to give this away because it's a beautiful tree.
I'd give it another chance. I really would. And we'll come
really
gonna, during the break. I'm going to look up what we can do for you. Just stay listening, and because we have to take a hard break. And,
I had another question about kiwi vines.
All right. Well, why don't we put you on hold then? Do you mind?
Thank you. No, I don't.
All right, Mike. Can we put her on hold? We're going to have to take a short break for Hostess Cupcakes. more soda, possibly some sausage bread, and definitely and some herring.
And then can we go to the playground? Huh? Huh? Can we?
Yes, we can, Scott. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. The music means it's time for great moments in gardening and other stuff you didn't know about plants. Well, maybe you did, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
I was just going to say, I know an awful lot about plants.
I know. And it's, you know, what is it? A couple weeks before Thanksgiving.
November 21st.
And remember the seed catalogs used to come in at, just after New Year? Now, I'm getting...
They're already.
Yeah. And the thing is, I like to try a couple of new plants every year.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I know what's going on. But what I've learned through the years is that these magazines are like the Playboy catalogs of... The Playboy magazine.
Playboy catalogs. I didn't know you could order bunnies.
The Playboy magazines of the gardening world. Mm. The nice pictures, blemish free, and seductive descriptions of how delicious they are, and how you got to really watch it, folks, especially if you're not familiar with this stuff. For instance, this one catalog that we got last week, 500 pages. It's got every type of exotic plant possible. And you got to be aware that they're trying to sell you this stuff. 5 seeds for $3. Ooh. It's got to be good.
Yeah.
You know? And what I'm saying is do your research. Don't take the catalog's word for it. Do some research online. Because you're going to find some comments like, here's something I looked up today. Strawberry spinach. Do you know the little berry on it? It has a little berry. It's a beautiful red berry. Kind of a lanky plant.
I'm completely unfamiliar with this plant.
The leaf kind of looked like a spinach leaf, mm-hmm. but just tastes awful. And there's hardly any flavor to the rich red berry on there. But that's what they're calling it. Because it looks like a strawberry. Wonderberry. Wonderberry has been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, let's try Wonderberry. Maybe, I can make some nice jam out of it.
And it made you wonder what the big deal was?
Yeah. Well, come to find out, you got to be real careful when you pick this, otherwise, because it squishes in your hand very easily. And it's only good for jam. And you got to mix it with something. Lychee tomatoes. Lychee tomatoes, Scott. That and they're little round cherry tomatoes, bright orange, perfectly round. Trouble is the plant's 5 feet tall, grows like a ground cherry, but 5 feet tall, and it's got thorns on it. Okay, that's out. Luffa squash. I was convinced I was going to grow luffa squash many times, and then I looked it up.
That one's been a hot trending item this season.
Yeah, but you saw my garden out there.
I did.
The vines go 30 feet.
Yes, it does.
I don't have room for 30 feet, maybe in the back 40 where the trees are,
growing up the side of the tree.
Yeah, and last year I needed to grow watermelons. I had to successfully grow a watermelon, and it's difficult to do in New England, especially with a smaller plot.
Big old manure pile. You get your manure now, you let it sit over the winter.
Where am I going to put it? In the middle of the backyard?
Yeah, right in the middle of the Japanese garden. I mean, you get that big open area. Yeah. It's just really not doing anything. It's just gravel. I mean, I just.
No, I grew what was called a pocket watermelon. I brought it in, and it was guaranteed.
Every few days.
Almost. It was the size of a grapefruit. But I had 7 watermelons, and they were ripe. I studied how to check them when they were ripe, cut them open, and I think half of it was seed. The rest of it was pulp, and it was just not enjoyable to eat. So really, really look at...
In 1 inch of rind all the way around.
No, the rind was okay, but it was more seed than water. I was spitting more than I was eating.
Oh.
But the whole point of this is to research what you want to try that's new. And it's probably better that you ask maybe a fellow gardener for recommendations. They'll be better off.
Well, at least I know who to come see before I try stuff out, because I actually was contemplating those loofahs. I know the missus likes them.
Yeah.
And she spent money to go buy them before, and I was thinking, oh, that'd be a fun one to grow. But, yeah, 30 feet. I'm glad we chatted.
Yes. Okay. Well, you just let her know.
Especially when you only got a 24-foot ladder.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I can see them up in the tree right now. Let's see. Let's go to back to Jane in West Hartford, was it?
Yeah.
Jane, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am.
Okay. So, Jane, tell us your story again about the crab apple.
The raindrops crab apple.
Yep.
That I planted near junipers and found out after the fact that that's not a good mix.
Right.
So the tree leaves got loaded with cedar apple rust. I sprayed it with fruit spray.
Yes.
Many times.
Yes.
And then the leaves turned just brown. It looked like it had died.
Yeah.
So I went up and cut every branch down to the trunk.
Okay.
And then it started leafing one day. I looked out and the top of the stem or whatever has leafing on it. Lots of healthy leafing.
Yeah.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
Yeah. And what I'm going to do is, we were talking about you. I don't know if your ears were ringing, but we were talking about you during the news. And we think you should keep that growing. You can get rid of it, but because there are alternatives that not as nice as this tree. But there are alternative crab apples that are resistant to cedar apple rust.
Oh.
Okay. So what you can do, there's two things you can do. There's control practices where, like we mentioned, go out now and then.
What is it called? I'm sorry.
Control practices. These are not sprays. These are just what you got to do. The physical things you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
One is to go out now and throughout now until spring and cut out as many of those galls as you can see on the junipers.
Okay.
Okay, because they're going to form spores in the spring and they're going to spread to your apples. Okay?
Okay.
Now, there is no really... There's no fungicide that you can apply to your apple and then eat the fruit. Okay, so this is entirely ornamental. You can't make crab apple jelly out of any apples that form, okay? One of them is restricted, and you might want to get a professional to come in and spray. That is called, I'm going to spell it for you, MYCLO. Butanil, and that is most effective at preventing the rust on the apple tree. And what you're going to do is spray it when the flower buds start to expand, and then after it flowers, continue as the leaves emerge, which may be a couple of applications, and it will cost you some money. The other option is copper or sulfur products that you would normally find in a they're organic, and they're for fruit trees.
Right.
And you would do the same. Apply them as the flower buds expand, and then after flowering on the new leaves, and continue that until the weather's warm. And you'll break the chain. You'll have to do it every year, most likely.
But, oh, brother.
Yeah, and my other concern there is metals tend to build in the soil, so if we're doing this year after year after
year. And they tend to burn, too. Now, there are a number of crab apples that are resistant to it, so if you wanted to cut your losses while they're available, I don't recognize any of these as a weeping type, however, but just look up cedar apples rust resistant crab apple varieties on the web, and there's a number of them. Indian Summer is one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's a good one. Who else is on that list, Len?
Adams. That one, I think.
Adams is old. That's old school.
Adirondack.
Yeah.
Beverly.
Yep.
Candied Apple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dolgo. Donald Wyman, another oldie.
Yeah.
Eli. Mm-hmm.
Connecticut's own Donald Wyman.
Yep. El Wangarina. Henry Kohanke, Indian Summer. Lisset, Lollipop, Mount Arbor, Narragansett, mm-hmm. Persiflora, Ormiston Roy, Purple Prince, Red Baron, mm-hmm. Red Jewel, and Robinson.
Well, there's a lot of choices.
Oh, a lot of choices.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I'm going to, I'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I may
and the
replace
worst,
it.
Worst thing that's going to happen is if you let this go, it's going to flower until it dies, and then the leaves are going to get spotted and then fall off. But it'll still flower.
Mm. I may donate it to a school.
Sure. Let them bother. What a gal.
That doesn't have junipers around it. No, it's a very beautiful, it was an expensive tree. So I've donated some flowers to a correct school. Yeah. They were setting up some, having the kids do flowering banks of flowers and planting.
Great.
So if I find somebody, I'll donate it and replace it.
Yeah, just make sure, check out the juniper population.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I know. My second question is I have planted two kiwi vines about 4 or 5 years ago. They bloomed beautifully.
Yeah.
It's a male and a female. I checked that out. They started blooming this year with the little white flowers, and then we had that snowstorm.
Yeah.
That was the end of that.
Yeah, that was the end of
leafing, it seemed to die.
Oh, did they leaf? Did they keep growing?
No.
They just keeled over and died?
Yeah. The leaves just shrunk.
Well, you're not having any luck this year, are you?
No.
Kiwi's a tough one to kill.
Yeah, generally they're super. I mean, they call it Arctic Kiwi.
I would let it go. Don't do anything to it. See what happens to it in the spring. If you have dead branches, cut them off that aren't leafed out and start again. But I have a feeling that the root system is fine and it's just going to take some time to get back going.
Should I feed it something special now?
No, nothing though.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of feeding anything that's kind of back on its heels.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then
great.
Let it find its feet first.
Yep, there you
go. Okay. You were wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, could you
and
say
I
that
love
again?
Winterberry Garden.
I hear that so rarely.
Yes.
I
wish my wife could hear this, but she won't listen to the show because I'm on it.
Well, you did. Winterberry Gardens did my very first design for my home.
Wow.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, I think he was just starting out.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, Scott, so we're talking 85, 87, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Wow, that's great to hear, Jane.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much.
Take it easy,
Jane.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Okay. All righty. Hey, we have to take another short break. Bob, if you're still on the line, we'll pick you up right after this. Whistle While You Work It.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's what the kids are calling it nowadays.
Yeah. Welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. I was a little bit ahead of myself, guys. We're still halfway through the third half hour. Believe it or not.
I'll stop talking when they shut it off.
All right. Let's go to Bob in Glastonbury. Hey, Bob. Welcome to Garden Talk.
Wow. Finally. Hey, you guys are good.
Whoa.
Wow.
I think that was a little bit of wait time.
I think we need to do a little customer satisfaction research at this point.
All right, Bob.
5 minutes. This has got to be an important question.
You're popular.
Here's my question after 35 minutes. I planted 75 to 80 New Guinean impatiens around my house. I got it all lined up to hit the sprinkler system. Do I pull them up or do I leave them there as markers before I plant next year?
Oh, next year? Well, first of all, if they come up next year, you'll be lucky.
No,
I think he understands that they're gone. He just wants to know, should he yank them now or should he wait for spring?
Exactly.
It's one of those questions that's coming up a lot lately. Like, I have to ask all my customers, grasses, you want them up? You want them down? Hey. Want them up? You want them down? Different answer every customer.
Well, what would you rather do, Bob?
Yeah.
Well, leave them there. So, of course, I've already got the spots marked so they get hit by the sprinkler system.
Okay. They answered your own questions. I don't know what you were waiting for.
Yeah, what are you waiting 35 minutes for, Bob? Really? Wow. No, you could have been doing something useful.
Well, I didn't know if it was bad to leave them in the ground.
It's a good question, Bob. And in reality, so the other impatiens, the not New Guineas, but the regular impatiens that so many of us have come to know, have been harboring little oospores of a powdery mildew that, you better get those out of the ground. You don't want to leave them over because you can create a disease situation that will make it almost impossible to be successful with impatiens there ever again. I know of no particular.
And you make fun of me for asking.
Yeah, well, we make fun of most everybody. You can add that to your complaint when you write into the complaint department that you had to wait for 35 minutes. You can write in that. And they were surly and
at their comm radio, Boston, Massachusetts.
But so in the case of New Guinean patients, I know of no overwintering oospore. Again, the plants from the other side of the planet, there's not a lot of native things that are diving in on top of it. And I think for the most part, you should be safe.
But then again, you got nothing to do right now, Bob.
Well, he could be out pruning his trees.
Or waiting to be on hold.
You could
have solved the problem with the plant. Well, you didn't even have to call us. You could have spent 35 minutes doing that.
But we're glad you did, Bob.
Okay. Bye.
Hey, Bob. Bye.
He's going to go do a Sudoku now or something. And, at least he has something to show at the end.
He's going to beat the dog, and then he's going to call Intercom. I know it.
Oh, yep, boy. We're in trouble again. It's okay. We live there.
Let's go to Mike in Bristol. Mike, you there?
Hello?
Hello, Mike. Welcome to Garden Talk.
I was struggling to hear it in the background. Okay, I'm on the phone. I have a question about gooseberries.
Yep.
I believe this is in the gooseberry family. This is a really weird plant that I've been growing for years, and just recently the Hart Seed Company from Hartford, Connecticut, their packages showed up in the Agway stores, and they call them pineapple cherries. Now, my question goes to how do I conserve the seeds for these things? I don't know anything about, saving
pineapple
seeds.
Cherries. Are we talking one of the ground cherries? Is there
a little
papery husk?
I could look for the package. I might have another
one. Yes, look and see if there's a little papery husk around the outside. Looks kind of like those.
You know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I'm from Bristol, right? I hear you talk about winterberry gardens.
Sure.
They're great. And years ago, there's a great place in Bristol up on the Terryville line called Watusik's Nursery. So I bought
them. Oh, yeah.
Still
there. Yeah.
No, they're great, right?
Phil and Scott are still up there.
So
know them well.
Maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I purchased from them a thing that they called a strawberry tomato, which is it's a husk tomato just like this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This year, the ground cherries, they showed up under the Bonnie plant name. Hey, they were even at the big box stores.
Sure.
I was disappointed with the ground cherry called the pineapple version. But guess what? Some of the stuff, because I got a compost pile that I got from Watusik's years ago, the strawberry tomatoes, they came back. Because I went back to get the plant.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't.
You'll find that with the ground cherries, too.
Well,
they'll repeat. Once you get them started in an area, they'll repeat for you on a regular.
I had two plants that came up. And they're great because the pineapple cherries kind of like underperformed, but the plants that I dug up out of my backyard, they're great. And now I'm saving all of those. I'm not letting the kids eat those because I want to save the seeds. How do I do that?
If you can hold on, we're coming into a hard break here, and it's a little bit more. I mean, you can just let the fruit dry out, but then you're going to have a lot of plants growing, seedlings growing in one spot. But hang on, after news, weather, sports, we'll take you up again there, Mike.
Thank you.
WTIC News Talk 1080. That means, that music means it's time for the tips of the week. Bob, what do you got?
Well, the other morning I got up, making coffee in the kitchen, and I looked outside at my rhododendrons. And they were curled up, snuggling together. Leaves were rolled up
like cigarettes.
Rolled up like a cigarette. And I said to myself, self, I think you should go and buy some Wilt-Proof.
Yep.
And even though you're not going to do it today or tomorrow, you're going to have the Wilt-Proof. So over the weekend, you can
when it warms back up.
So that's my tip of the week. Anybody that doesn't have your Wilt-Proof, go buy it now, because you're going to need it in a few more weeks.
Yeah, save those rhodies, save those azaleas.
Yeah,
it's a good tip, Bob.
All that burning that you're going to call up about in the spring. You can prevent that from having this cheap insurance.
Here, here.
Do it now, and then again
depending on the
January thaw. Maybe.
Yeah.
Scott, what you got?
That's what I did.
But haven't you been listening? It's time to prune your trees. I'm sticking with that. This is my I'm Bible thumping on this one all the way through the whole show.
Boy, I'll tell you.
Now is the time.
You're boring.
You can do more good work, but literally, this is the best time of year, and nobody does it now. Nobody.
I do.
There you go. Those of us in the know do our tree pruning now.
Get those suckers.
So, become one of the cognoscenti.
All right, I'll put it on my list. First, I have to stack the rest of my cordwood.
Well, that's considered pruning.
Already done, yeah.
Stacking wood, it's going to burn anyway.
But it has to be stacked neatly.
Are you going to do patterns? You're going to put like a hoot owl in there and the forest? Well, what's the point?
I'm not Martha Stewart. No. It's good. You go outside in the patio in the Circus Maximus out there and see it, how nice it is.
I shall.
Yeah.
In the owl fireplace?
Yeah, the owl fireplace. Let me see. Oh, you got to protect your evergreens. You're going to get snow. Are we going to get a lot of snow? Are we going to get a little snow? I don't know.
Who knows?
But look at those eaves. I want you to walk around your house today and look up at the eaves and remember what happened a couple of winters ago. All the snow avalanched off and broke. And
busted up a whole bunch of places.
Japanese maples.
Yep.
Just broke. Evergreens, anything that can break will break. Well, why don't you do something about it? Smaller stuff, you can make little wooden teepees to break up, to keep them upright. Or you can wrap in burlap, the pointy ones, the tall pointy ones. Japanese maples, put some. Those are better with bigger teepees.
Much bigger teepees.
Yes. But don't use plastic. I'm looking at, I can't believe this, the Gardener's Supply catalog. Look,
usually pretty good.
Yeah, but they've got a plastic tarp going over boxwood to protect it.
Yeah.
How many times have we learned don't put plastic on?
Bake stuff. And then even if the plastic touching on the leaf and it goes to it on it, transfers to cold.
Exactly. And that's just a tarp. And how much do they want for it, Scott?
10 by 20 round is $21.95. The 10-foot round is $14.95. That's a lot of money for a plastic bag.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So protect your evergreens. Go around the eaves and see what can be damaged. And then do something about it. At least tie them. Tie them with some twine. Hemp twine. Yeah.
Or if you have funny, he just, fell off of his chair right below the Nason Dixon line. Pop back up.
Or if you have your evergreens, that's a good way to get the snow off of them. As you're walking by, take a shovel and just gently
whack them.
Gently hit the sides of them so that the snow just falls off them. Solid ice.
Been out at customers gonna be doing mine this weekend. A couple of ties of twine around those arborvitae to keep starfish and all over the yard. That's just money and time well spent.
That's right. Then that's our tips of the week, Garden Talk tips of the week for today. All right, so let me see who's on the list here.
We had somebody on.
We had Mike.
Mike.
Mike, are you there? Michael?
Yes.
Mike. There he is.
Hey, all right. Mike from Bristol. What were we talking about?
I thought you lost me. Hey, look, I'm just trying to figure out how to conserve some seeds.
Yeah, he's
miraculously.
Oh, that's right.
This is in the gooseberry family. They were called strawberry tomato ground cherries.
Well, they're actually tomato family.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, I don't know what they are.
they're tomato.
Yeah, they're closer to tomatoes than anything else. That's
So what condition are they in right now?
Oh, I grow everything in containers, so I've conserved all of these things. They're still alive.
Okay.
I can ask you a separate question if I can bonsai peppers, but right now, I bought some plants, and they were the pineapple cherry ground cherries.
Now I remember.
The heart seeds. Those underperformed. They're probably in the range of about a half inch in diameter.
Yeah.
I had a couple of plants that I all of a sudden discovered near my grapevines, and I dug them out of the ground, and I put them into pots. And now they're really cranking good. And these guys are closer to like 3/4 of an inch.
I would tell you on the pineapple one.
That's the right size.
That is the right size. That's all you're getting. This is literally a wild one.
Yeah, I don't want those anymore. I want to grow the ones that I have.
Okay.
I went back to a 2/6, and he saw we didn't plant any this year or whatever. I said, I'll get you the seeds. Here's what happens. Once you harvest these things, they're in a little paper husk. I leave them in the husk. And I did this for years, maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
I put them in cardboard, just an open cardboard, like a top of like a box.
Yeah.
And I leave them and let them air dry, whether it's in a garage or the rec room or whatever.
Yeah.
And usually I harvest them around now. And then by Christmas time, they start to shrivel up a little bit. They start to look like raisins. They're still edible. By Easter, they turn into like a little nut, and if you open them up, they look like a strawberry that shriveled up because all of the seeds are exposed.
Right.
So a lot of that stuff went out into the compost pile, and a couple of them managed. They crawl up out of my driveway and out by the road. I got them all over the place. But the plants that I saved, I want to rescue because I was not able to find the seeds anyplace. So I guess what it goes to, what's the best method to conserve these seeds, to save these seeds? I'm not a seed guy.
All right. No, it's easy as pie, okay? It's just a little different process than, we'll say, peppers, which are much easier. What you're going to do is take a ripe berry, okay?
Yep.
And you're going to take a small jar with a cover, a baby food jar, something like that. Put some water in it, about a half an inch of water, and you're going to squish a couple of these fruits, these berries, in the water.
But I should do that at the peak of freshness?
You should do that when they're
ripe. Peak of maturity, yeah. It's not a fresh thing. It's a mature thing.
Right. Because what you're going to do is you're going to ferment these things. You're going to leave them around for about 2-3 weeks. You're going to put them on the kitchen counter. Wife's going to say, they're all moldy. Get them out of here. You're going to bring them down the cellar. And you're going to forget about them. And they're going to be nothing but mush. They're going to look disgusting. Well, what you do is you bring them upstairs.
When your wife's not home.
Right. Good thing, Bob.
Bring it upstairs. Get a colander, a really fine screen colander, and you're going to dump the contents of the jar in the colander and then run some warm water over it and rub the screen with your fingers. And you're going to see that there are some very heavy but very small seeds there. Once you get rid of all the mush, you're going to tap the seed. You're going to tap the colander upside down onto a paper towel. You're going to dry the seeds for a couple of days. Then you're going to take those seeds, once they're dry, put them in an envelope, and then you're going to stick them in your freezer, labeled whatever you want to label them.
Okay.
Do not throw out seeds.
ground cherry.
Or ground cherry.
Ground cherry is fine. And then sometime... if you start them indoors, sometime in late April, you'll plant them inside and they'll sprout, and then you can plant them out in your garden.
All right, let me ask you a separate question say I mess up. Are there any people around here that if I brought some of the product to them would conserve the seeds as a backup to what I do?
No, what they would say is go online. There are a dime a dozen out there.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
I'd agree with Lon.
Vermont, was Vermont High Top Mountain or something like that?
High Mountain, sure.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're online. They say
High Meadow.
Do that,
excuse me.
Meadow,
yeah.
We buy
yeah.
all of our seeds and repackage them. So
yeah, High Meadow would be a good bet for that. They're a great seed provider. They're very organic with all their practices. They love to conserve heirloom stuff. Yeah.
No, I'll drive up there. I'll bring you my things if you can just.
No, they won't. They won't do that because they're.
Yeah, they can't. The they have no longer have control. They don't know what you brought along for viruses. They don't know what you did for.
And besides, they want to sell you the product.
And yeah, and they don't want to buy stuff. They want to sell stuff.
These things are the greatest thing, and nobody knows what they are around here.
I think they're more well known than you think.
Yeah.
And when I go to other nurseries, they've never heard of them. And
because they don't sell them.
I
have a little granddaughter that's like 2 years old right now, and she's nuts for these things. I mean, I could stop her.
Oh, yeah. They're like candy.
Yeah.
It's a very unique plant, and when I didn't find the plant this year, I bought the variety that was called the pineapple cherry, and I was disappointed. And
That's the wild one that your variety is probably born of. Wow. That's the original.
Well, my variety, as I understand it, I think maybe even Thomas Jefferson might have banged on these things or made wine out of them. But it was robust, and it lasted for the longest time. And like I said, it gradually dehydrated, and I was not afraid to eat it, even after 2 or 3 months. And I leave them in the husks. I just leave them in an open cardboard box exposed to the air.
Okay. Can't
no
hurt
refrigeration,
you.
Refrigeration. Nope.
Well, thanks, Mike. We appreciate
all right,
your call. And I hope you can be very successful collecting those seeds.
Yeah.
Greg, if you're still on the line, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with the last of Garden Talk right after this.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection. The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
And welcome back to Garden Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. Lobster Bob, celebrating his 15th anniversary on the show, is here along with Scott Reel from Winterberry Gardens in Southington. Great place to do some shopping and some landscaping and lots of stuff.
I have been informed I am not supposed to ever say there's anything we won't do. I got to go check. So it doesn't matter what you want. Just, come
and
ask.
And I understand Santa's Village is coming in.
Well, Santa's Workshop is certainly setting up in the greenhouse area. And the kissing balls and wreaths and all that stuff, which we scatter hither and yon. We're pretty famous for doing the shops at Canton. Seems like everybody in the valley knows about our work there. But, yeah, we do a lot of decorating in a lot of other places, too.
I understand that the kissing ball is no longer the kissing ball so much as it is your engagement ball.
Yeah, it's more like a socially distancing ball at this point. Yeah, probably we're going to save a lot of money on mistletoe this year, I think.
Anyway, let's go to Craig in Southington if he's still there. Craig, are you still there? Hello, Craig. All right.
Craig's on the 5 minute. Yeah,
Let's put him on hold then. Let's go to Jeff in
West
Hartford.
Any minute now, he'll know that we were talking.
Hey, Jeff, welcome to Garden Talk.
Hey, guys. Great show. I love it.
Oh, I'm glad you do. We do, too.
Got a little problem getting to the point. Along the southern property line of my property, I have a row of arborvitaes. Mm-hmm. All of them have done well, except the two easternmost arborvitaes, which when I was out raking, I noted they're starting to brown. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is there anything that may be attacking those particular arborvitaes, or are they just perhaps suffering from the drought we had this summer?
Yeah, there you go. I love it when you guys call in and answer your own questions.
These are eastern arborvitaes. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're okay. Western arborvitaes, and they're on the wrong end of the
country.
Oh, here we go.
It had to happen.
Yeah. So I think you kind of nailed it on the head there, Jeff. It was one of the ugliest summers we've ever seen in Connecticut. We had more 90-degree days than we've ever had ever before. We were quickly finding that, you know, we were powder dry down to, you know, 3-4 inches. That's most of the soil biology that lives in the soil is in that top 3 to 4 inches. And most of the evergreens really, really count on those soil biologies to get them through. So it's not surprising that we're going to find things like recently planted arborvitaes, pines, things that have very high reliance on mycorrhizae, tiny soil fungus that actually works in support of trees and shrubs. I'm not at all surprised to find that you've got that issue. For instance, if you're driving down the highway and you look at that new planting of pines that the state put in, and every third or fourth one is kind of dying out there, it's because of that high reliance on mycorrhizae. So here's the good news. 20 years ago, you couldn't have done a darn thing about it hardly because these things weren't available. But in this day and age, soil mycorrhizae are available. And the beautiful thing about it is it's an inoculation. And it's going to rely on the plant to feed it. The plant's going to rely on it to feed the plant. It's a symbiotic relationship. And so I would tell you, go out and look for some of these mycorrhizal. You're looking for vesticular, arbuscular mycorrhizae. But don't worry, you don't need to remember all that. It will say VAM.
I thought you said testicular.
No, ventricular, Leonard, jeez. God, even I don't, never mind. We'll discuss Bigfoot and those other things here later. But right. In the meantime, I would tell you, go out and find yourself some of these mycorrhizae, which you will find in most garden centers at this point.
I have one question, Jeff. How recently were these planted?
Actually, they've actually been in, I would say, 4 or 5 years.
Well, so they're established, and they shouldn't have gone south.
Yeah, but we saw a lot of bigger, older, established plants taken on the chin.
Oh, sure, because they went south because they're on the eastern end of the row.
Oh, God, he's back on again.
Now, how do these mycorrhizides come? In a powder form?
In a powdered form, usually, that you mix into a slurry. And you want it mixed in that because if it's in a liquid form, it's going to penetrate down and just gravity is going to pull it down through the soil profile.
And if they're totally toast, that may not work. They could be toast, but
they could well be toast. But are we just seeing tips browning so far? Or
they're
is it just
gradually turning brown? They went from a deep green to.
Yeah, from the inside out or the outside in? Is I guess
they're entirely that way.
Would you give them some water right now? I'd soak them if I could.
It was one of the tips I considered for my tip today. It was just let's go out and make sure everybody's wet and going into the winter.
We're gonna get rain tomorrow night, so
not enough. What will be tomorrow night will be great added to something on those plants today. Soak the soil. Get it primed.
I was thinking of wrapping them in a drip hose and just letting them soak in for a while.
Well, that could work.
At this point, it really couldn't hurt.
Okay.
Yeah. If it's brown all the way through, though, the news isn't terribly good there.
Yeah.
We might be looking at some new ones.
They're kind of green brown. They're not completely brown.
Yeah, but if you wait till they're all brown, that's nature's way of telling you at first that there's a problem is usually a little late. Like the problem's already pretty well set by the time they're starting to go brown, and there's not a lot to do.
Yeah. All right,
like saying you're not old, but you're slowly getting older.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Good luck.
Thank you for the info.
Yeah, let us know how everything turns out, will you?
Yeah.
And usually when Scott's not here, so we can blame him.
Oh, well, that's nice to know.
So, last week when you talked to Scott.
Well, that's why,
But we just saw so much death. I mean, literally old and established trees that have been in 12 and 15 years just suddenly turning up toes.
Well, look at the storms, how the trees came over. And they were, you could see that the roots were shallow. They were out 25 feet, but these are huge trees that came down.
Yeah.
It was just one of those years, I guess, all the way around.
One of those years. I'm hoping this year is not in a set. I'm hoping this is a singular event, 2020. I hope never to see a year like it ever again. You know, the people who are rushing to Christmas, that's normally not me, but I get it. Because if Christmas comes sooner, then the end of this year will come sooner too, and I cannot wait to see the backside of 2020.
Yes, Scott, there is a Santa Claus. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. It's another Garden Talk down the tube. I mean, in
the books.
In the books. Yes, there you go. Sure.
Congratulations to Sir Robert of Lobster for surviving two decades on this.
Can you imagine that? I know. It's just impossible. I mean, you're on what? Year seven or something like that?
Oh, who knows? They come and go in fits.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like everything else. Well, Bob, you know what we say, don't you?
Yes. We'll see you all in the garden.
God bless everyone.